Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
Pressure from the ramp. Bridgewater hangs in there and throws, and it's caught. Cortland Sutton in stride makes the catch. Bridgewater throwing on the run. End zone caught.
Man, it was so good to see number 14 back with his 2 feet in the end zone holding a football. A long year for Cortland in 2020, obviously injury related. Gets hurt very early in the season. It was game number 2, right, against the Steelers?
It was, and he missed the opener.
And he missed the opener because he had something else. I forget what he had going on.
It was a minor injury because he only missed the one game. I don't remember what it was either, but he was able to then play in week 2 against the Steelers, and I believe he got injured after a pick.
After a pick.
Trying to make a tackle, sort of the Terrell Davis model.
Right.
And then he, you know, and it was in the first half, so he essentially played half of a game in the entire 2020 campaign. We've been down at training camp, and I said this all the way back at OTAs and minicamps, he just didn't look right. And then in training camp, he got better as time went on, but he's got that kind of clunky-looking brace. And if you're playing offensive line or playing quarterback, you can kind of get away with that. When you're playing wide receiver, playing running back, it looks awkward. It just doesn't look like you're able to run
right,
kind of with your normal stride, gait, whatever you want to call it. He got better as time went on, but what he did on Saturday night in the game was the best I've seen him look. And I think part of it is Cortland Sutton, and he's a young guy, he's in, what, his fourth year?
Yep.
He's gonna have to, I think he's gonna kind of have to transform what kind of receiver he is, at least here initially. The kind of transition you see guys make later in their career as they start to lose a step due to age. His step may come back, right? He may totally recover from it, but the guy who was just relying on the fact that he was bigger, stronger, more athletic than everybody and could just go, you know, win the jump ball. He's not going to be able to be that guy. He's going to have to be more of a precise route runner, you know, kind of being a student of the game and getting open and doing those kind of things. We saw on Saturday night he can do some of that. He did a really good job of working his way open on the touchdown. He was running good routes. So, yeah, that was a big positive to take out of a relatively meaningless game.
Yeah, I think it's noteworthy for sure, to your point. And going into the break, I said Cortland Sutton made his 2021 debut. But the most impressive part of his return can't be found on the stat sheet. For me, it wasn't the touchdown. It was planting the way that he did on the left knee, getting open on the initial catch to the right sideline. I mean, it was textbook, and it was, you know, that movement when you're coming off of a knee surgery like that, that movement is a violent movement. And the way that he just slammed that thing into the ground and took off in the other direction, like you're planting and you're pushing off at once at full speed in an NFL game. I don't care who the defender is. I thought that was the biggest takeaway. It's like, okay, he still has his brace on. Yes, when we were out there, it looked like Sutton was like in sand a lot of times.
Yeah.
It's just like things looked tough for him. And we would isolate, you and I, stand next to each other, just watch him. Both had the same, a similar takeaway. So I thought, man, I thought Saturday night, and it's going to get lost in time, you know, as the games and days fall off the calendar. But I thought that was a big time moment in his career. And I don't think I'm overstating it. He's trying to come back from a serious injury at that position. I thought it was a signature moment and really maybe a bit of a forecast of what's to come here in 2021.
Yeah, and I think that's the type of receiver he's going to be early in the year. And if he can stay healthy, I think as we get into the second half of the season, you'll start to see a little bit of the Cortland Sutton of old. I'm not saying any injury is a good thing. But if you can take what Cortland Sutton used to just be athletically and just his ability to be a Pro Bowl receiver, primarily on the fact that he's just got unbelievable talent. And then you can put with that a guy who's had to become a little bit more of a student of the game and combine those things. Well, now you really may have something special. So I think, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves off of one game and a couple of catches, but you can kind of extrapolate it of, okay, this could turn into down the road.
Sure.
It benefited him in some way, not as much as just being able to play for the year and never getting hurt. I get that. But there is some good that could potentially come of a bad situation. But you're right, that the plant and cut, you know, if you were watching like a sports science segment, right, and they were, you know, kind of showing you all the things, like the torque that goes on your knee when you have to make that move at full speed, and you're doing it on a surgically repaired ACL, I think that's passing a big, big test. And I think both physically and maybe more importantly, mentally, because you got to just be able to go do that and not think about it.
Right.
It's just happening at instinct. And that was part of what we saw down at training camp. He just seemed like a guy that was either running in sand or he was just not quite confident to do what he used to do and just go out there and not think about it. We started to see a little bit of that on Saturday night. Just a little bit. Just flashes.
Yeah.
And that's a big time step in the right direction.
We're being told by a million folks on the RamosLaw.com text line. We appreciate all you texters out there, even the ones who hate us. 303-713-1043. It was a shoulder, like a rotator cuff that happened on like the last practice before the 2020 season kicked off. So
the Von Miller practice? Was it the same practice? Did they both get hurt in the same day?
No, I don't think so. But it was, I think it was the same week. I think it was the same week.
Well, it definitely was practice because they didn't have a preseason.
No, correct.
So he didn't get hurt in a preseason game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a...
They were real tight together because I remember being like, is this real? Like, Sutton's going into the season injured. Vaughn's already, you know, yeah. And it was flashbacks. I remember we did, like, flashbacks of Shane Ray who got, you know, first day of training camp, remember, hurt his wrist and took three surgeries.
It's like the week when they lost Chris Harris Jr. and Emmanuel Sanders in a, you know, the game against the Bengals and then in practice, all of a sudden they went from 6-6 and in the playoff hunt.
Oh, that's right.
Well, that season just went up in smoke.
That's right.
Same kind of like...
Because they were
the
3-6, I want to say. They were 3-6. I don't know if you just said that, but they were.
And then they got to 6-6.
They got to 6-6, and we were looking at their schedule, and it was like pretty manageable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember we did a segment. It was like, hey, if the Broncos win out, Vance Joseph could win Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen.
They went to San Francisco.
George
Kittle.
Yes.
Had like 700 receiving yards against them in the first half.
You're on it because they were 3-6. This is going back to 2018.
I think they lost 17-16 to Cleveland in there.
They lost 17-16 to Cleveland on a Saturday. A late season Saturday game.
Yeah.
And then they got drummed by the Raiders in Oakland at the time. And then finally lost to the Chargers. They got thumped pretty good. But yeah, they went from 3-6. They beat the Chargers on the road by one, and then they beat a good Pittsburgh team. And it was like, whoa, like our antennas were up. And then they followed up with a win against Cincinnati, and got to 6-6, and then, you know, lost the last four.
In the game against Cincinnati, Chris Harris Jr. got hurt. And then in practice leading up to the Niner game, Emmanuel got hurt, and the wheels just came off.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yep, that was it. That was it.
Man, wouldn't it be something if Vic Fangio could be 512 games into a year?
Oh.
Wow. I mean, the only time that guy ever has as many wins as losses is right now. 0-0. He's 0-0. That's as good as he's ever been as a Broncos head coach, is 0-0. He's done it twice.
That is hilarious because it's true.
It is.
It is what it is. Yeah, George Payton on the broadcast referenced their record in September. He said, we are 0-7 in the last two. He mistakenly said last three seasons, but the last two seasons. And when you say that sentence out loud, when you say the sentence that the Denver Broncos have not won a game in September since 2018, and we're going to the 2021 season, that is disturbing.
Well, and it's made even worse by the fact that the Broncos historically are really good in September.
Yes.
I mean, you go back to the Shanahan days. They always started off well, and then they'd fade. Go back to the two Trevor Siemian years. They were really good in September. And part of that is when you're playing at home and it's early in the year, especially with the way training camp and preseason is now, teams aren't in the same ready-to-play shape that they are October 1st, right? So you're playing in 90-degree weather at altitude.
Right.
And the Broncos always have an advantage because of the altitude. But early in the year, they have a huge advantage.
Huge. I think there used to be a stat. Like they had like the best winning percentage in the month of September or were amongst the top three or whatever it was.
Yeah, so to go 0-7 anytime is bad. So to go 0-7 as the Broncos coach, it's kind of like if you're a punter at CU or if you're a punter for the Broncos, like, yeah, you should lead the league in punting yardage.
Okay, sir.
You're playing half your games at altitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same thing. 0-7 in September anywhere is bad. 0-7 in September in Denver, it's almost impossible to do.
And here we are.
Yep. Vic Fangio's pulled it off.
Here we are.
He pulls off the impossible.
The Broncos will win a game in September here. They will win a game in September. Mm. That is James, they will win again. How about this? When is the last time, and we're going to do a segment about this maybe tomorrow here. I was looking at the Superbook odds for the Broncos. They have mapped out every single game and a spread on them. The first three games of the year, the Broncos are a favorite. And I asked the question on Twitter. If you want to interact with the tweet, you can go for it. I'm at Buysline. Said, when was the last time the Broncos were favored in three consecutive games?
Was it last season they weren't favored in a single game? They had a season where that was the case. I think it was last year.
Was it last year?
It's, you know, it was such a weird year with the COVID year, but I think it was last season that they were the underdog in every single game, which is remarkable. And now to be, I think they're favored now in like half the games.
More
it just
than
shows
half.
You.
There is no half anymore. You have 17 games. They are favored in 9 of the 17 games.
It shows you how soft their schedule is, right? It's a bunch of, we all talk about the Giants, the Jags, and the Jets. They also get the Bengals, the Lions, the Eagles. They get some bad football teams.
They do.
All the more reason it has to be playoffs or bust. You're favored in 9 games. So you got to win one or two games you're not supposed to win, and you're in the playoffs.
This is where you and I, we disagree on a lot. We are perfectly in sync with this one, and we will return to this conversation.
Okay. Right.
We will return to it. But first, the Broncos have had an issue in one area for years, and it could cost them again, week one against the Giants. I'll tell you what that is next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
The Broncos have had an issue in one area for years, it seems like. And it could cost them week one against the New York Giants. Who's that?
Wrong. Maybe a joke got played on Tom there.
Oh, man, James. James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely, who took another day off today.
The issue. Screw you, Zach.
Even when he's not here, he's here. The area of concern here is the Denver Broncos special teams. It has been this way for years.
Mm-hmm.
Even pre-Tom McMahon. It was Brock Olivo.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have 22 Janos.
22 Janos.
You're good.
We'd be all right. But on Saturday night, it reared its ugly head again. It was on display. They let up a big return that flipped the field, almost gave up another before the game was through. Vic Fangio was not pleased about the special team performance. How could he? We'll get the audio here in just a second from Fangio post-game, but what do you make of this issue that, you know, we see a lot of times when these football seasons start that special teams earlier in the season can be more glaring than late. I have concerns. So does Vic. This is the head coach after the game.
They got a kickoff return early there, which, you know, their first field goal they scored on us was the big plays were the kickoff drive. We got a face mask penalty. Then they hit a screen on us for a good chunk, which was a good play on their part. But, you know, if we don't give them the ball wherever it was, I can't remember. Where'd that drive start? 40? Yeah, that's too much. You know, we've got to make it better. We've got to find the players. We got to get the players we have that we keep covering kicks better. And if not, we've got to find players that will. And obviously, we need to do a good job of coaching it, too.
Okay. So a lot to unpack there. Because actually, Vic Fangio started off, he was making excuses for why his defense gave up points. That was the initial where he was going. It was the kick return. It was, you know, it was a screen pass. It's not even a real play. I mean, good for them. They did a real, but whatever. And then it was a penalty. Like, he was making excuses for his defense, giving up points to the Rams threes. And then it sort of segued into, we have to be better on special teams, which they do. But look, if you don't make a change, if you bring back the guy who was the architect of terrible special teams the last 2 years, I don't know how you can be shocked that they're not better. And they blamed it on depth. How many times have we heard that?
They
don't have any depth. They don't have any depth.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so their depth is so much better this year. It's what? It's Caden Stearns? Like, he's just going to be so much better on special teams than Will Parks was. Like, all these guys that were backups that become media favorites, that's all we hear. Oh, he's a standout on special teams. We also heard it about Jano all the time. It's like, well, go back and watch the punt return they gave for a touchdown in L.A. against the Chargers when they lost 21-0 when Trevor led them to the first time they've ever been shut out in 30 years. it's Jano that blows it, right? Like, people just love to throw that out there. He's good on special teams. It's kind of like saying he's got good command of the huddle. Nobody really knows what it means. Oh, he's good on special teams.
Well,
Tavon Webster was good on special teams because he made plays.
Tim Patrick.
Okay.
Good on special teams.
But we throw it out there with a lot of guys, and I sit there and say, when's the last play he made on special teams? So I don't necessarily buy this, oh, their depth is better, they're going to be better on special teams. It's the same guy running the show. And here's the issue I have with it, Zach. Okay, if you want to play low-scoring, conservative football and try and win game 17-13, to the point where you're going to play the quarterback who his mistakes lead to punts, where the other guy's mistakes might lead to a turnover and you give up 3 points. If you're going to play that kind of football, then you have to be good on special teams. You have to be. But the guy who was leading this bad special teams the last 2 years, he wasn't held accountable. He's back.
He's back.
The quarterback.
To start pulling the reins back on a horse, and pretty soon the horse isn't a horse anymore.
The quarterback's not back. He lost his job because he's not perfectly suited for winning games 17-13. Another guy who gets a free pass, and one guy gets held accountable. That's my issue with it. Like, look, if you're the Chiefs and you got marginal special teams, it probably doesn't matter. But if you're the Broncos and you're on this razor thin margin, it does. Now, you know, not coincidentally, the Chiefs actually have really good special teams, and Dave Taub is one of the best special teams coaches in the league. But it's inexcusable to me that you're this bad in a phase of the game that can determine wins and losses when you're trying to win 17-13.
Right.
It's inexcusable.
It is. And Vic, obviously you hear the frustration in his voice. But how could you fire a guy?
I'm not very good at math.
How could
And that's what I coach, is just there on the rectangle.
You're throwing water balloons on a battleship.
You know what, though? I don't buy this Vic Fangio's frustrated. You can hear the frustration in his voice. I don't buy it.
No?
No, it's his staff. He could have made a change.
Well, I was shocked that they didn't, because special teams for the Broncos was a real glaring issue. I've said this probably 5 times this offseason. How many times? This is a serious question. I'm not, like, being facetious or taking shots. How many times is a 5-11 coaching staff return everyone year over year?
It's remarkable that they're all back. And I don't think it was Tom McMahon. I think it was Brock Olivo. But this goes back. Do you remember the game in Oakland where they didn't know the rules and that the punt was live at the 1 yard line?
Yes.
And the Raiders pick it up and run for a 99 yard touchdown?
What year was that? Was that 2018?
I want to say it was 18. I think it was the end of the VJ era. So I think it was VJ's last year. So it was Brock Olivo. And Brock Olivo got held accountable for it and lost his job. Right? That was bad special teams. It has not been any better under Tom McMahon, but VJ lost his job. Vic Fangio isn't any better. Vic Fangio gets a free pass. Brock Olivo lost his job. Tom McMahon isn't any better. He keeps his job. He gets a free pass. It's the standards have been lowered here, right? Like, that play was embarrassing, the play in Oakland. Like, it cost Brock Olivo his job. Now, he may not have been fired that week. I don't think he was.
No.
But at the end of the day, that's the type of stuff that lost him his job. Tom McMahon, it doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't matter how embarrassing they are. Doesn't matter how what he draws up, where it's a fake punt that everybody knows it's going to be a fake punt because Deontay Spencer's running in motion and Deontay Spencer's never in on special teams on punt coverage. Like, it's a dead giveaway. That's an embarrassing type of a play and an embarrassing scheme. But Tom McMahon just continues to roll with it, and then Vic Fangio acts shocked that it didn't miraculously heal itself, and they've cured all that ails them. Of course, their special teams is bad. I don't know why any of us would have thought it would be different, because they blame it on depth, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to anybody that's on an NFL roster. I don't, because they're unbelievable athletes, and they're great at what they do. Compared to all people who've ever played football,
of course,
they're great at it.
Of course. Of course.
But the bottom 25 guys on every NFL roster are all the same. They're all interchangeable. The 25 guys on the Texans are the same as the last 25 guys on the Chiefs. They are. They all make the same amount of money. They all have kind of the same skill set. They have all the same things they're lacking that don't quite make them stars and make them, you know, guys that are starters. They're all interchangeable.
And that's where coaching takes over.
Where coaching takes over. It's why the Ravens, who John Harbaugh was a special teams coach with the Eagles before he got the head job in Baltimore,
that's right,
are good on special teams year after year after year. Rosters change over, to an extent.
The bottom third. It's like your car salesman staff.
Yeah.
Like we used to say every year the bottom third of these guys are going to be gone.
And so if a team is consistently good on special teams, like the Ravens, are you telling me that they're just that much better at turning over the bottom third of the roster than everybody else? Or is it about coaching? And the Broncos are consistently bad on special teams. So you're telling me that the bottom third of the roster, every year with Brock Olivo, every year with Tom McMahon, is just that bad? It's not the coach? Come on. It doesn't add up. It doesn't add up at all.
Well, it's something that we are sensitive to around here because the Broncos have suffered in a major way from it. And here we go, eyes on week one against the New York Giants, because you know who their coach is? Joe Judge. And what was his job before he got that job? Special teams coordinator.
And here's why it's frustrating. Special teams is all about attention to detail. That's it. That's what it's about. When was the last time the New England Patriots lost a game and you could point to a special teams blunder as why they lost? You can come up with a lot of games as to why they won a game because the other team made one. Wes Welker fumbling a punt up in Foxborough and they beat the Broncos during the Peyton Manning era because of that play. Like, they win games because of their special teams. They don't beat themselves because of it. Good teams do that over and over and over again. Bad teams are bad on special teams. Bad coaches have bad special teams units. It's just the way it goes.
And you just referenced the Broncos and the Patriots, juxtaposed to the Patriots. Do you remember? We've been going down memory lane here a little bit.
Yeah.
It was the 2017 season. The Patriots beat the Broncos like a drum, 41-16. And for the first time since 1979, the Patriots had a special teams takeaway, a block punt, and a kickoff return for a touchdown. A trifecta that fueled a comfortable 27-9 halftime lead. All special teams. All special.
Yeah, there you go. That's what good teams do. Bad teams don't take care of that phase. That phase of the game. They pay lip service to it. They tell you all three phases matter, but then when you go out there and watch on a week-in, week-out basis, clearly it's not something that they're paying attention to.
Got to get it figured out before week one, because something like that could haunt them in a game that is supposed to be a coin flip contest, according to the folks at Superbook. All right, there was something that happened. This next segment is unbelievable, okay? There is something that happened over the weekend that I can't believe is true. What's worse, it took place on live television. Details next.
The diesels are out of the game, okay, so it's all Ferraris right now.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
That's what we were saying this weekend watching ESPN. Who are you? Did ESPN? I'm so here for this too. Like, this sounds like summer, man. Classic. So good, man. So good. I like all types of music. So I'll go from hip hop right to this stuff. Oh, it's great. It's great.
Okay. This is like summertime, like in the era of the movie Dazed and Confused,
yes,
though, right?
Yes.
You're riding around in the back of a pickup truck, and you're wearing cut-off jeans.
Right.
None of your parents have any idea where you're at all day long.
Looking to paddle freshmen.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So 70s.
Oh, Lord. Something happened over the week. I legitimately can't believe this happened. And what's worse, it was on live television. Serious question. Did ESPN get catfished? The ESPN family of networks were jam-packed with high school football this weekend. The first of the 2021 campaign and the first real season in 2 years. The weekend concluded Sunday with the grand finale, Hall of Fame Classic at Canton's Hall of Fame Stadium, pitting the defending national champion, IMG Academy. Have you ever heard of IMG Academy?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you have. It's a powerhouse. But the problem is their opponent, well, they don't really exist. ESPN seemed as confused as the rest of us and said so as its announcers vamped their way through a game that was not at all the one that they thought they were getting. For starters, this is a school, Bishop Sycamore. Sounds prestigious.
Yes, it does. Sounds like they would have like a board of trustees.
Yeah. Like, where do you go? I go to Bishop Sycamore, had to transfer in.
They've produced a couple presidents.
Parents didn't want me to go to the public school.
Right, right.
Choice me into Bishop Sycamore.
Took three different buses to get there. It took an hour every day.
That's right. Yeah. Claiming to be from Columbus, Ohio, they went 0-6 last season. The program's second in existence. IMG James pummeled Sycamore. The score was 56-6. But nevertheless, Sycamore got in Sunday showcase because, according to ESPN, the school acquired, this is Sycamore, the school supposedly acquired a number of FBS prospects. FBS is what used to be called a 1A, like it's your Ohio State.
So big-time guys that are going to be big-time recruits, they recruited them in and loaded up their roster.
Yes. Except as Anish Shroff and Tom Luganville explain here, that turned out not to be true. Listen to this.
Bishop Sycamore told us they had a number of Division I prospects on their roster. To be frank, a lot of that we could not verify. And they did not show up in our database. They did not show up in the databases of other recruiting services. So it's okay. If that's what you're telling us, fine. That's how we take it in. From what we've seen so far, this is not a fair fight. And there's got to be a point now, Luke, where you do worry about health and safety.
Now, I already am worried about it. I think it's this could potentially be dangerous given the circumstances and the mismatch that we have here. And quite honestly, Bishop Sycamore doesn't have not only the frontline players, but they don't have the depth in case something were to happen to their roster with maybe a kid or two here throughout the remaining 2.5 quarters of this football game.
This was brutal. At that point, it was midway through the second quarter, and the score was, I think, 30-0.
Yeah, it was 56-6 because they took the foot off the gas.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they could have scored 100 points. They
literally could have scored 100.
Yeah.
Sunday's matchup, along with every game ESPN aired across its weekend-long Geico High School football kickoff slate, was apparently arranged by Paragon Marketing Group. From the company's website, quote, Paragon works with ESPN programming to select the top regular season football and basketball games in the country, typically airing around 25 of them annually. The problem is, when you do any research into Bishop Sycamore, you find out that it is a total sham. Their website is a blog. The last post was like from a few months ago, and it was like how to get the attention of a head football coach on social media. When you click on the About Us link, there's nothing there. What's worse is I went and did this morning. I went and clicked their the brick and mortar school, like the physical location from the Google Earth cameras. It is literally a strip mall. It's a 4 or 5 store strip mall. This was over the top embarrassing, and they're lucky that someone didn't get killed this weekend.
They are. You know, you see this sometimes in college football early in the year, right? When schools, small schools take the cash grab to go play Alabama.
Of course.
And I mean, heck, we even heard it a little bit when, and I don't mean this as a CSU dig. I got plenty of CSU digs to come, but when CSU went down to Alabama, you're like, oh my gosh, you worry about them a little bit because everybody expected it to be a rout.
Right.
Rams actually held in there in that game for a half, to their credit.
They're called money games.
Right. Exactly. You see it and you worry about it in college, but in college, at least you're grown men.
Right.
Right. Like,
kids are on full scot. Like, I used to be the voice of the University of Albany, and luckily for my, like, career, got to call games at UNLV, Syracuse, Duke, Kentucky, courtside. Because they would pay the University of Albany $100,000
right.
to come. The athletic department needed that money. But those kids are on full rides, too.
Yeah, at least they're getting something. They're adults. You're talking 16, 17, 18-year-old kids here. And, you know, look, they're football players. It wasn't as though this was, you know, you're looking at it, it's a bunch of, you know, it looks like a bunch of 12-year-olds. But still, they're under 18 and getting put in this spot, which is really, really bad.
So bad.
And ESPN's passing the buck to Paragon. And look, Paragon's the one that pulled off the sham here, the way we understand it, is that they get paid to put together the games. So they needed a team to play against IMG. You know, you got to find somebody that has a bye in week zero. You got to find somebody who's willing to go up against the defending national champ to start the year and potentially get beat up and, you know, take a Valor, for instance. If Valor goes and plays this game, they can probably hang in there.
Oh, yeah.
But they also have a chance of, like, getting pretty beat up and then having to come back and play their Colorado slate, and it could throw their season off. So it's probably a little bit hard to find an opponent. So you just make up a team. They get a bunch of kids from who knows where.
That aren't going to school.
It's an online
school.
Right.
But when you go online, There's nothing there.
Right. Right. So it's not even a school. So shame on Paragon for pulling this up, putting this together and pulling the ruse. But shame on ESPN, right?
Yes,
like,
oh, yes.
We couldn't verify it. No, you said in that you could verify it. You could verify they weren't Division I recruits. You verified that. They weren't, that they were making it up. So they, you know, you got to do your due diligence on this. And I know it's tougher with high school than it is with colleges, but you can find out the school doesn't exist. You can go to their website.
You can click about us and realize
right.
that there's nothing there.
Like, there's nobody that does a little bit of background on it. Surely there has to be, because you're doing background to research that for the announcers heading into the game, right? Tell us a little bit of something about Bishop Sycamore. Nobody did any research on these teams, on these schools, and even bothered to look at, well, like, who are the famous alums? That could be an interesting tidbit to throw out there in the second half if the game gets out of hand.
Right.
Like, somebody was looking into this and should have come up with the fact that, hey, there's nothing about this school. It's a total breakdown in just sort of the systems that are in place to make sure, hey, what we're putting on the air and calling a game is on the up and up. There has to be a little bit of due diligence, compliance, something.
Here's maybe the most disturbing part about it. They played on Friday night. Bishop Sycamore played on Friday night in Pennsylvania and then played again on Sunday.
Wait a minute. So I read that it was the Friday before. It was 2 days before?
Yes.
I was thinking it was 9 days before.
No.
It was two days before.
No, from my understanding, on Friday evening, they lost a game in Pennsylvania, 19-7, traveled right to this game on Sunday. They have 11 games left in the season. 11. None of them are in the state of Ohio.
You know, wait. But Zach, when you're taking your classes online, you can take those classes anywhere.
Right.
You can travel.
Right.
You can move around. Well, and here's the thing, because you start looking at these type of situations, it's always, all right, follow the money. Well, you read it. It's the Geico High School Football Kickoff slate, right? So ESPN's making money, Geico, right? This Paragon, they're making money for putting the games together.
Oh, yeah.
Because ESPN doesn't want to deal with the scheduling nightmare of high schools and, you know, teams from all over the country. So Paragon's making money. Somebody from Bishop Sycamore has to be making money to take this team all over the place and do this.
Yes.
And it's like the old barnstorming days from baseball, or like something you'd have seen in the 1920s, not the 2020s, of you're playing a game in one place on Friday, and then on Sunday you're playing in another place, because back in the day, news wouldn't travel via telegraph fast enough for people to know what you were doing.
Right.
That's totally inexcusable. Like, that is just shameful.
Last thing, because we have to move on, but the associate AD of Bishop Sycamore was being questioned by the newspapers. And he said, quote, "It seems like when you read about the school, you hear things, well, they just run around aimlessly and are just trying to play football. I don't think people understand that a lot of these young men, they really, 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 really want to go to college. They really, really, really want to be good fathers. The way to teach those things is through football. I don't think people understand that. They get so caught up in the football aspect of it that they don't realize there's actual people who really want to do better in life," end quote. A problem is, football is the only thing that you guys do. So you say you're getting caught up in the football aspect of it. What else could you get caught up with? It's only football. Your function as Bishop Sycamore is to play football. That's it. So
I'm sure those kids do have those desires.
Sure.
But Bishop Sycamore is using those dreams and goals and desires to their own benefit.
As a vessel, yes.
And not giving them anything in return by what we can gather, right? Like, they're not getting an education. They're not getting other things. Like, yeah, there's always some of that where you're getting used to some extent, somewhere on the spectrum. But this is just so off the charts of completely using the kids, and everybody's profiting and benefiting, and they're getting nothing in return. That's what's just awful about it.
Crazy. And I misrepresented the score. I said it was 56-6 on Sunday. It was 58-0. Shameful. Okay. The Broncos preseason is officially in the books. How has your view of this team changed, if at all? Take a dive in this conversation coming up next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
The Broncos. Broncos preseason is officially in the books. How has your view of this team changed, if at all? James Merrillat is filling in for Brandon Stokely today, who yet took another day off. We're counting him.
Right.
Keeping him accountable.
Is he in more than the rest of us?
I think he does.
Seems like it.
I think he does. Was he here Friday, Richie? Was Stokely here? No, he was not.
He was not.
Okay. All right. Do you feel better, the worse, or the same about this football team after the Broncos went 3-0? And just your eyes, what your eyes are telling you. Forget the final scores. You had a 27-point victory strung together, followed by a 17-12 victory on Saturday. Where do you stand right now with the Denver Broncos?
Well, I feel slightly better than I did at the end of last year, but I don't feel any better than I did a year ago at this time. I picked them to go 10-6. I liked their roster then. I could look at it and say, man, they got a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. The things we're saying now, we were basically saying then, right? They had the highest priced defense in football a year ago.
That's right.
Same thing we're saying now.
That's right.
They had brought in A.J. Bouye. They had brought in Jarrell Casey. They had Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. That defense was going to be great. Vic Fangio's a defensive genius. Like, oh, man, they're going to really come after people. And then it's on the other side of the ball. You got Cortland Sutton coming off a Pro Bowl season. Jerry Jeudy, the highest drafted receiver in the history of the organization. K.J. Hamler, man, they went back-to-back with wideouts. Noah Fant's going to be better in year two. Like, we were saying the same things a year ago. So I got duped by it, and I think I was right about the roster. I actually do think the talent is good. I didn't apply the proper Fangio factor. That's still the same case, still the same situation. Like, I don't feel any better about Vic Fangio as a head coach now than I did then.
I feel worse.
I do, too. I guess to some extent I do because of the decision he made at quarterback and some of the things we continue to hear from him. And it's like he hasn't gotten better at those things. Like, even if you want to be benefit of the doubt guy and say he's never been a head coach, you got to kind of learn on the job. He's still doing the same things.
Mm-hmm.
He's not better at anything. He's just stubbornly refuses to admit his faults. So that part of it, the rest of the coaching staff, Pat Shurmur, Tom McMahon, I think if you, and I've said it a bunch of times, I think if you wiped out this staff and had Mike Shanahan and the staff he had his last year here in Denver, I think they're a 10-11 win team. I think they're a playoff team. I think if you had this exact same roster and it was Andy Reid and his staff he has right now in Kansas City, I think they're a 10-11 win team. I like the talent a lot. I like the roster a lot on both sides of the ball. I just don't trust that this coaching staff's going to get the most out of them. I just don't. Maybe I hope they prove me wrong, but that's my concern.
Well, I can't give you any real sturdy pushback on Fangio. I can't. What would I be able to say if I were going to play defense on behalf of Vic? So I'm not going to play that game. Was your assertion about Mike Shanahan that this team would be, you said 10-11
win team.
Is that with Teddy Bridgewater?
I think with either guy, but I think Mike Shanahan would go with Drew Lock. You watch Drew Lock on play action and the kind of stuff they had success with here with Jake Plummer. He's Jake Plummer talent wise. He's Jake Plummer with a better arm. He can move. He can make those throws on the run. Like, he's a little Jay Cutler-esque. And that's a bad comparison to make in this town because people don't like Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
But talent-wise, that's what he is. And I think had Mike Shanahan stayed here with Jay Cutler, I mean, Jay Cutler's the final year of those two guys together, he put up big numbers. And they missed the playoffs. They fell apart down the stretch. But he was going to have a monster career number-wise had he stayed with Mike Shanahan. It would be Drew Lock. And now, Drew Lock does not have the intangibles that Jake Plummer had. Doesn't mean he can't get him because he does have moxie, right? He's got swagger.
He does.
He's got confidence.
Look, a part of the reason that, like, Drew is very likable, and people don't like believe me because I've had to point out like facts and factors and things that he did that hurt this football team. But Drew takes accountability. Drew's a worker. Drew has talent. Drew has a lot of things going for him, and I think because he has those things, he's going to be in this league for a long time.
Yeah.
Drew Lock is going to be in the NFL in some capacity for many, many years. But there's this thing missing. There's still something missing with Drew, and I think it popped up on Saturday night because oftentimes you and I would come in here after watching training camp practices, and I would say I think Teddy won the day. And a lot of the times we agreed. We actually agreed more often times than not, I think. But the times that we did not agree is because I would say, James, there was four completions today for Drew that just aren't real. He holds the ball too long. And yeah. I think that reared its ugly head, and I'd say that this isn't real football. So, like, times that you – and I'm not aiming at you here, but I'm saying, like, times that you would give him credit for that, like, look at that ball. It was true, but in real football, it just doesn't happen like that. And we saw that take shape on Saturday.
But it's a little bit – and I understand what you're saying, but it's a little bit like the two drives Teddy had in Seattle. You know, I can sit there and say, well, he wouldn't have actually put up touchdowns because they would have punted on fourth down. And fair. And Stoke and Tyler, everybody would say, yeah, I can't unsee what he did on fourth down. Even though they probably would have punted in a real game, he still did it. Even though maybe, and let's even say you're right, that those would have been sacks or whatever, he still made the throw. It was still a very impressive throw that Teddy Bridgewater can't make. Now, you need to make it sooner, and, you know, you need to do some of those things. But the part of it that's not coachable, he still was able to do better than the other guy. The part that is coachable, get rid of the ball sooner. Hey, say the snap count twice in the huddle. The dumbest argument ever for why Teddy Bridgewater was leading is better in the huddle, better command. Because, you know, Graham Glasgow says he says the snap count twice. Like,
I mean, but
how hard is that to coach?
Well.
Drew, say it twice. 3 seconds.
I mean,
job's done.
Look, that came from his own teammate, though.
I get it.
That wasn't like a media creation. Like, that was like Graham Glasgow. And here's the thing. Everyone was dancing on the line at that point of, like, you know, Teddy, they're both great. We can win with both. And they're doing this PR thing, which they had to do because they're put in an uncomfortable position. What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
Yeah, I know what you're laughing at.
It was the glance. It was the glance.
Yeah. Glance toward the clock. See where we're at
who
here.
Who can ramble for 2 minutes? That's what we were glancing at.
No, but at the time that Graham said that, everyone's playing the game, and the fact that he gave any differentiation between the two, I thought it was a little clue.
Maybe it was a little bit of a clue, but I do think that if it was Andy Reid, and he was making this decision, it would be Drew Lock. It's the same reason Mike Holmgren went with Matt Hasselbeck in Seattle 20 years ago.
But Andy Reid wasn't on the hot seat.
I know, but that's why this is a bad decision, right? Kyle Shanahan's not on the hot seat, despite the fact that they had a losing season last year, because he's in sync with the GM in terms of their contracts and in terms of their motivation and their goals. And he's going to eventually go with Trey Lance because Trey Lance has more upside than a guy who took them to a Super Bowl. It's the same reason why Mike Shanahan moved on from Jake Plummer to Jay Cutler, even though Jake Plummer was able to get them to the AFC title game in 2005. Mike looked at it and said, look, I coached Steve Young. I was the offensive coordinator in San Francisco. You need that kind of quarterback to win a Super Bowl. I coached John Elway. I was the head coach here when we won back-to-back Super Bowls. You have to have that kind of guy. And he looks at it big picture wise. They left this decision to Vic Fangio, who is looking at this as almost as small a picture as you could possibly look at it.
I don't think it gets smaller.
I mean, three games is really what this was about. And to me, that's the issue with it. But I like a lot of it. I think Drew Lock in the right situation with the right head coach and the right offensive coordinator would be very good. It could be a very good quarterback. They have tried to turn him into a guy that has to go out there and be a robot, make no mistakes, and play perfect. Like, did he mess up the other night and hold on to the football too long, and it turned into a turnover, and it was a turnover at a really bad time, and it led to points for the other team, and it was a microcosm of everything that's been an issue with Drew Lock since he's been here? Yeah, but it was also one mistake. He's had one turnover throughout the entire preseason.
But you're reducing the competition down to the turnover stuff. The coaches are looking at it differently, and this is KKFN, KKFN, HD1, Longmont, Denver. Got them.
I went till within 5 seconds on that Drew Lock rant.
All you had to do was finish it.
I was going to turn it over,
and you turned it over.
I was still going. I didn't know I was going to get cut off in traffic and either slam on the brakes or just, you know, rear in the car in front of me. That was well done.
Juice is rare.
Thank you, coach.
You can tell you're the veteran here.
But with Drew, you like this game of like, hey, it was this many interceptions compared to this many interceptions with Teddy and Drew. You know the coaches are, the scope is so much wider than that. Like, and Vic said that, like, this is going to be like a comprehensive thing. Look, did you think, two questions here. Did you think Drew Locke won the competition?
Yeah. Because he didn't do anything to that was problematic, right? Up until this past week when he had the fumble, but the decision had already been made, right? Like, he was asked to eliminate mistakes. And in training camp, he didn't have any more mistakes than Teddy. And in the preseason games, he didn't have any mistakes. And in his one chance to start, the one preseason game he started in his entire career with the Broncos, he was 5-7, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns.
He was great.
Like, I don't know what else you can ask him to do. So I do think because he was coachable, and they said, we want you to eliminate this. And you could see at training camp, he made a conscious effort to eliminate those mistakes.
But the problem is, in an effort to eliminate those mistakes, he, A, was not the best version of himself. Like, the best version of Drew is just to go out and play and take the good with the bad. And hopefully over time, there's more good than bad. But he became like, it's almost like he became like neutered with the football. He held the ball too long. We saw it every single day, and I think the coaches are looking at that. So, like, instead of, like, throwing the interception that everyone's, like, you know, keeping track of, I think they're looking at that play and saying, that's not real ball. That's not real ball.
I get it, but that to me is an example of why this is bad coaching. Because now all of a sudden you're taking a guy that has all this raw ability and these skills that can make him an effective quarterback, and the word you use, I think, is right. You start to neuter him, and you're trying to make him something he's not, instead of taking those skills and say, hey, how do we build upon this? But we did see him in the preseason, right? So and I get accused from Tyler and Stoke and, you know, some of the former players of, you just care about the highlights. You just care about the wild play. No, I care about a guy who can make plays off script. So the 80-yard touchdown, that's an exciting play. It's great. You know, apparently it's the easiest throw in football, but we didn't see Teddy do it. But that was exciting. And then you also see, the backhanded flip against Seattle to move the chains. The play's off script. That's a punt if Teddy Bridgewater. Well, it's a fourth down that they're going to go for.
Like, first of all, like, how often do you plan to be off script? Never. It happens 20% of the time. What?
They're always off script. That's the problem with this decision. It's the same problem they had with Brian Griese. Right, they went with Brian Griese because he would follow the script and he was good at the whiteboard. But the only way you can score doing that is to go have this 12-play march where Garrett Bowles doesn't miss a block and you get sacked. Garrett Bowles doesn't have a holding penalty. Graham Glasgow doesn't whiff and Melvin Gordon loses 4 and now it's 2nd and 14. As long as you're on script, Teddy Bridgewater's going to be fine. But I go back to the Miami game last year, and it was the Broncos' first scoring drive. They had 2 3rd and 10s and a 3rd and 14. And Drew Locke converted all 3 of them, 2 through the air and 1 with his feet. Teddy Bridgewater doesn't turn that into a scoring drive. He just doesn't. And that's the part of it. To have any kind of offense that can consistently score, you have to be able to get out of a bad down and distance. You just have to. How many drives are you going to have in a game where you put together 12 plays, 78 yards, and nothing negative happened and you get in the end zone? 2? 3? Okay, so your team is going to score 14 to 21 points. That's the problem. That's the issue I have with this. I should have gone with that rant right up to 158, and I'd have hit
it. Yeah, you've been fine.
I'd have been fine. So good.
Look, here's where I'm at with this whole conversation. This went, and I'm saying this because it's legitimate. I'm not saying it to pat myself on the back. I promise you, this went exactly how I thought it was going to go. This went exactly how we predicted. We said into these microphones. Vic Fangio is going to go with Teddy Bridgewater. Drew Locke was put in a position with the maybe a facade of a quarterback competition. But I said from the start, he's fighting a two-front war. He is trying to beat out Teddy Bridgewater and also play well enough that his play serves as one of those memory erasers from Men in Black. And it just was a task that was probably unreasonable, an unreasonable ask. And we also said that if it's tied, if it's close, which it was close, Drew got better. They were going to go with Teddy because the sins of the past is just too, like, that Vic is in the position he's in right now, in part, not solely, because Vic bears a lot of responsibility, injuries, all this stuff, but in part from Drew. And if you were going to try to, identify a Bronco a year ago that had the heaviest hand in the worst turnover differential in all of pro football, like the one thing that you can't do in that sport where your odds to win just take a dive if you're even minus one. When you take that into account, it was a mountain that he wasn't going to be able to climb. And just to be real about it, he didn't create the separation that you would have hoped.
He did not. And here's where I missed in terms of making my prediction. And you were right, and Stoke was right. And it's why I'll be buying a lot of blue cheese olives. Is I looked at it like I think a GM would look at it.
Yes.
If it's a tie,
yes,
you go with the young kid who has upside. It was basically a tie. Like, we could sit here and argue for 6 hours about every practice because they were basically even. We could compare the stats from Teddy's start in Seattle and Drew's start in Minnesota. They both played really well. They got a chance to start the competition, and they both, you know, seized the opportunity and played well. It was a tie. Essentially, it was a tie. It was close enough, you might as well call it a tie. And they went with how do we win in September and save Vic Fangio's job versus what's the best big picture thing. And you guys nailed it. But here's the part of it that I think is misleading, and not that you're intentionally misleading, but when people say Drew Locke led the league in interceptions, okay, he had 15. The year before, Jameis Winston led the league in interceptions with 30. So when you hear led the league in interceptions, you think of a turnover machine. He had 15. Russell Wilson had 13. Tom Brady had 12. So it's not as though.
Yeah, but Russell Wilson's out there throwing 35 touchdown passes. Brady was out there throwing 40.
I get it. So it's the touchdowns, it's the lack of touchdowns, not just the interceptions, but all people focus on is the interceptions. Andrew Luck led the league in interceptions 3 times. He played 6 years. So it's not this thing that, oh my God, if you lead the league in interceptions, you're a terrible quarterback.
But doesn't that deserve being mentioned though?
It
if you
does.
Lead the league I'm not dumping on Drew, but when you lead the league in picks in an NFL season that had the lowest picks in the ever, and the highest completion percentage ever, and he has the lowest like that stuff. That's part of the story here.
It does, but I think to say someone led the league in interceptions sounds different than he threw 15 interceptions. It's the same thing, but one is a little bit more hyperbolic than the other. Now
they're both just facts, and one sounds better for you than the other.
No, okay, fine. Isn't that a fact though? But it's like the lowest total for leading the league in interceptions in like the last 20 years.
That's because quarterbacks don't throw them anymore.
Okay.
That's part and parcel of the conversation.
But here's the other part of it. And then that turns into that Drew Locke is why they had the worst turnover differential in the league or whatever it was. You know why they had the worst turnover differential in the league? Two parts. One, Drew Locke led the league in interceptions with 15. That was part of it. But the other reason is because Vic Fangio and his vaunted defense forced 16 turnovers in 16 games.
But absolutely part
heading
of the
story. Into the finale, yep. They had 12 in 15 games. So it takes both, right? Like if you're going to have the worst turnover differential in the league, you either are a turnover machine or you're having quite a few turnovers and you're not forcing any. The reality is last year it was the latter. The Broncos had quite a few turnovers and Drew Locke could have been better with the football, but their defense was awful at forcing turnovers, and nobody ever says it, and nobody ever holds Vic accountable for it.
No, hold on a second. We've held Vic. Vic has fallen so woefully short of the standard. That is, I am not, you, there's not like a narrative with me. I'm not like trying to like push an agenda. I'm really not. Like, I am as hard on Vic as I am on Drew. Both guys need equal accountability held to them, but they're in different positions. Vic's the head football coach who is coming back. He is back with this team, and Drew Locke is a second-round quarterback that had an amazing opportunity and just didn't make the most of it. Neither is Vic. This is why we're here. This is why the Broncos picked ninth.
Do we still hear people refer to Vic Fangio as a defensive guru? We do. His defense last year with Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson, Bradley Chubb having a Pro Bowl year, Shelby Harris having the kind of year that earned him a 3-year, $27 million contract.
Gave up almost 27 points a game.
Exactly.
It was the first time in Broncos history they were bottom 10 in offense and bottom 10 in defense.
It's why I call him Teflon Vic, and people don't like to hear it, and they get tired of that moniker. But when you've got all that and you give up 27 points a game, you force 12 turnovers through 15 games, 16 for the year, and people say, well, yeah, but boy, they were decimated at cornerback. For like the last 3 games, like, what happened in the other 13 games where you were unable to force turnovers? And so the reason I say I think it's unfair is the fact that they had a bad turnover differential came up in a conversation about Drew Locke. And he only plays not even half, but the offense only plays half of that equation, and he's probably 75-85% of that offense's equation. The other part is the defense, and they get a totally free pass because Will Vaughn didn't play. And, you know, we had to play Parnell Motley in week 17.
Yep.
So how on earth
got hurt?
How on earth could we have could forced any turnovers the other, you know, 15 games of the year? It's a free pass. It's Teflon Vic at his finest.
I wish Brandon Stokely could be a part of this conversation if he didn't take another day off.
Day one of the Brandon Stokely smear campaign.
Wasn't here Friday, not here today. Don't know what I'm going to get. I'd rather have a 7. Like you said, I'd rather have a 7 than count on a 9 and everything. That's like, where's my co-host? Where's my co-host?
Wait, am I a 7 in this story?
You are, yeah.
I'll take a 7. I'm fine with that.
Oh, man. All right. Good conversation. One that we'll see how this one ages. You know, this is going to be, well, we'll see how it ages. We'll see how it ages. See if the, like, one thing that you and I agree on is that this was Vic's call. Has to be a playoff appearance. Has to be.
Yep.
Has to be. Not the 9-8. Even if you're 9-8. I mean, I know, and kidding aside, like, Stoke will disagree. I heard him and Mike Evans, kumbaya this morning, say 9-8, they'd be popping bottles.
Not me.
It, like the quarterback competition, it's about the full picture. A comprehensive picture. What does it look like up in two? Can't just forget the last 2 years. It's not just about this year. So I'm in Camp Merrillat in terms of his job security.
Yeah, because if you can't do better than 9-8, if you can't make the playoffs with the highest priced defense in football, the quarterback you picked it, and a cupcake schedule, as big a cupcake schedule as you can have in the NFL.
It's ranked the easiest in the league.
It's the perfect storm. If you can't do it with that formula, when are you going to do it? That would be my question.
All right, we know now the organizational goal of the Denver Broncos after George Payton's interview during Saturday night's game, and it boils down to one word, and I'll tell you what it is next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.